Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 36 for February the 25th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through this magical land of servers, networks, and all things connected. That's what we do here. If you have time, check out the website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message at 724-701-0550. You can email me with future ideas for shows or questions. That's at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Or you can also email me at jack@jackstechcorner.com. If you want to send a message here, maybe instead of using Gmail. I don't know. I don't know if people are afraid of using Gmail or what the case is. But anyway, you can also follow me on Twitter as at Technoman. So as I said here, we are talking about all things digital, all things connected, and your networks. You know, I wanted to throw this in there. I was thinking after I did all my show notes, and I was thinking a little bit about an email that I received recently from a gentleman. And it was on one of the shows, the past shows I did, where I was talking about Mac servers and how hard they are to configure and how hard they are to use. He brings up a very valid point, of course. If I knew what I was doing with them, then it wouldn't really be difficult. It wouldn't be hard. But I find it very hard to find documentation on it that I can use. I was trying to set up, and I did eventually get it working, a boot server and an imaging server on the Mac server. Now, what that allows you to do is if you boot up a Mac and you have this server on your network and you have it set up, you will actually see it and it'll come up with a server name. You can boot to that actual Mac server. And you can install your image right across your network. And it works extremely well. I'll give them that. It's a very, very good system. But it did take me a little bit of time to get it set up. And I called Apple. I said, hey, do you have anybody there can help me? And they said, well, we don't really do that. We don't really help with the server side of things. What you need to do is call an outside vendor and pay them about, $200 an hour. And I'm sure they'll help you. So I kind of lost interest in the Mac server. But anyway, the basis of his email was I need, can I talk about other things other than Windows servers, and can we talk about Macs and Linux? And maybe we will get into that. I was looking at the server software tonight, and I know it's getting better all the time. I haven't used it for a while, probably back since like Snow Leopard is probably what we were using. So I'm sure it's better. But the thing is I have to get reacquainted with it again before I can actually talk about it or teach it. So I'm hoping that maybe somebody out there has really good expertise that says, hey, maybe I'll do a co-host spot with Jack one night, and we'll do a Skype conversation, and we'll talk about the Mac server. And I would love to do that. And I put that out there to anybody listening to this podcast. Email me and say, hey, I would be interested in doing a co-host spot with you. So we can bounce ideas off each other, so we can talk about this server stuff. If you're really good with Linux, let me know, and we'll talk about Linux on this show, and we'll try to pull some ideas together. And it doesn't take long. This stuff does not take long to do. We can email back and forth a couple of times. We'll set up some questioning that we're going to talk about, and then we'll discuss it on the show. And we'll do a podcast such as this one. We'll record it live on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you think you have any Tuesday nights free and you say, hey, I know something about Mac servers or I know something about Linux, then I would be more than pleased to have you on the show, very much so. All you need is Skype, a microphone, and some kind of headset to listen in. Hey, I did want to mention tonight that the beer we are drinking tonight is called Magic Hat. It's Magic Hat number 9. I kind of fell in love with this when I was on my trip. And I picked up a bottle of this stuff and I said, wow, that's pretty tasty. It is just a little bit on the hoppy side. Very, very mild hops. Not like a bunch of them, just very mild hoppy side. And it's a very, very good tasty beer. Once again, that's Magic Hat number 9. All right, so I want to start off tonight talking about VPN access. Today we spent a good part of our day, which I thought it was going to be 20 minutes, maybe an hour. It turned out to be all day. Then I just kind of scrapped the project and moved on. And what I'm talking about here is VPN access with a Cisco VPN router. I later found out that it's actually a Linksys VPN router that Cisco purchased, right? You know, Cisco purchased Linksys because they wanted a consumer-grade networking platform. And we tried to set this thing up all day, multiple ways. And every time we went to connect to it, no matter how hard we tried, it would tell us it couldn't find a host. So it couldn't find a device for us to even log into. We tried every possible scenario you can think of, and it couldn't find a host for us to log into it. So I don't really understand that part of it. I don't know why it wasn't finding the host. We can ping it. We can ping the device. We gave it an outside IP address, plugged it directly into our outside router, you know, so we can go directly there without going through our firewall or anything. And then I said, well, wait, let's try this. Let's go ahead and plug it into the firewall. And we set up a static address to the internal address. We opened all the ports up. We gave it any access, any host access. We set that up. And still no dice. We couldn't connect to this thing any way we tried. So we went back. We plugged it back into our router. And again, we tethered our cell phones because you can't connect outside in if you're already inside. You're not going to go inside, outside, outside in, right? That doesn't make sense. There's no logic behind that. If you're already in your network, you can't go outside your network and come back in through your VPN. It just wouldn't make sense. So anyway, we tethered our phones in. We got on our wireless laptops, and it was just like we were out on the internet somewhere, like we were on the road. And we tried to access this VPN router. It would not find the host. We can ping it. We can ping the IP, so we knew the IP was live and well and it was working, but it kept coming up. It said it would not find a host. And I have set up a million VPNs in my life. And I thought this would be so straightforward because this thing's built like a home VPN box. Like you can buy this thing as just anybody, put the VPN box in your home and have VPN connectivity back to your computers. Yeah, not that easy. So here's my question, my first question to you out there listening to this show and thinking about, hey, I got to help this guy out a little bit because, hey, everybody needs to pay it forward. I didn't learn this stuff overnight, and I didn't learn it on my own, not all of it, a lot of it, but not all of it. Most of it I've learned from other people, right? We go out and we kind of drill in other people's minds, and we learn more and more about computing every day. So here's my question to you. With LogMeIn doing away with the free version, what can I use like LogMeIn that I don't have to worry about? I don't want to worry about setting up routes through my firewall. I don't want to do statics to the workstations because I don't want direct access to these workstations. But what kind of programs out there like LogMeIn where I can put a client on the workstation and my user can go home and go to a web page or something and log onto the computer? It seems so simplistic, but we can't find anything like LogMeIn. And we're not going to, we can't, in the job I do, and you guys know I work for a school, I can't go to the school and say, look, for each user, we're going to spend $149 a year so each of these five people can have access to their desktops for various reasons. It's not going to be very pretty. And it seemed like the VPN was the perfect idea. I had the perfect plan to set the VPN up, give them a little training how to put the VPN client on their home computer, connect in, pow, they're on their desktop, we're good to go. It just didn't work out for me that way at all. And that was a little devastating today, a little setback, but hey, it was 6 hours of intense troubleshooting, intense working, trying to figure this thing out. And I just finally said, I think what the problem is we need to come from our internet connectivity, so our internet box, go into the router, come out of the router, go into the firewall, and into our network that way. I kind of believe that's the way it works. The way I was trying to do it was come into the internet port of the VPN through our outside router, and then go through port number one, because it's a four-port LAN side, go through port number one and plug port number one right into our switches and have, hey, connectivity into our network. So you log in through the internet. I thought we can pick up an IP from our internal DHCP server. It would hand it to the workstation who's calling in from, you know, wherever, and you'd have full access to the network. But it didn't work out that way. So if you have any ideas at all for some kind of replacement for us to use, where LogMeIn used to do a beautiful job, and even now they don't have, you know, I can't find any educational discounts or anything for schools. So I don't know, folks. Are they working themselves out of business? I guess you can't work yourself out of business if you just get rid of the free versions. They had to have made some money somewhere now, because I know people are paying for this thing. Anyway, so that's my question to you. We're going to move on here. Here's a question I received the other day in the email, and it says, I have a domain controller, and I would like to add another to our server farm. We want the new domain to have a new name. Is there any way to have two different domain names talking to each other? Well, you know, absolutely there is. Servers are based on this. Now, you have to do, there's some precautions, and there's some stuff I'm going to tell you that will make your life a lot easier. First of all, you would use what's called domains and trusts. So you can set up a trust relationship between the two different domain names. It's very, very easy to do. Here's where so many people come into trouble with this. And I've seen it, and I get called out consulting jobs all the time. And they're like, Jack, help us. We're stuck. We just put this new Windows server, this 2008 R2 server in. It's a beautiful server. Everything's ready to go. And we're trying to trust relationship it to the old domain controller that we still want to keep in, you know, keep it around for whatever reason. It's server 2000. And you're like, whoa, wait. Even server 2003 and 2008. Very, very difficult to get those two to talk together. And a lot of it is because of the security, the authentications, and everything has been rewritten with each version of server. It gets very hard for those two to talk together. I mean, you have to make sure your patches are up to date, and you have to find some workarounds. You can get it to work, but I find it's very, very difficult. So the best thing you can do, first of all, is make sure both servers are the same version. Now, I told a guy that one time, and his actual way of fixing that up was he loaded server 2000 on his new server, because that's what was on the old server, and this was like maybe 3 years ago, but he got him to talk. Well, that wasn't the best case solution, because you know 2000's dead in the water. If you're running 2000 in your racks now thinking you're doing a good job, reevaluate what you're doing, because it's not the proper job to be doing. You got to upgrade these servers, folks. I know it's a pain. I know we don't like to do it, but we have to do it to keep our network secure. So anyway, you need to set up the trust relationship between the two domains. Now, before you can do this, make sure both domains can talk to your DNS server. This is critical. It's also just as critical to have, I like to do it this way first, to set up first of all, and I'm going to get a ton of emails. I always do when I make these kind of statements. When you first set this up, have a primary DNS server on, let's say your old server's play has a DNS server running anyway. Set your new domain controller up to point directly to that DNS server, the first one you have. And then you can allow these two to join together and talk over that DNS server. Once you have that established, then it's okay to set up a secondary DNS server on that new server. But when you first set that new server up, do not turn on DNS on that new server, because it's too hard to get those two to talk. Get one thing to work at a time. The first thing we want to do is build our trust relationship. This is very critical. Once you get the trust relationship built, then you can bring up your other services that you want to bring up. Now, once you do that, it's really, really cool how it works, because you can add users to domain one, and that user can show up on domain two. You can add users on domain two, that will show up on domain one. When you want to share files, you go to create a new file folder. You can give permissions to the folder from users on domain one or domain two. You can have them very separate. So there's a million reasons why you'd want to do that. Now I'm going to give you my private thought for my million reasons for not doing that. One, I have seen trust relationships break. Two, if a DNS server goes down, they no longer talk. Three, if the physical box goes down, you no longer are working because your users may be all logged in or your computers might be associated or binded to the one domain and they can't be binded to two domains at once, right? Right? That is right. So they're binded to one domain. If that domain controller goes down, they have no way to talk to, so they no longer can authenticate. They'll authenticate locally, but they're not going to authenticate across the domain. So what do I like to do? How do we handle it in our network? I believe in the KISS method. If you've never heard of the KISS method, it's called keep it simple, stupid, right? So keep it very, very elementary. I know we went to school for this stuff. I know we have these 8-year degrees. You have doctorates in technology, but sometimes you got to step back and say, look, let's keep it simple to keep it working. Even though we get more and more educated, we become server engineers, you become technology engineer people, you still want to keep it basic. If you stick to the basics, then things will work much better. As we build it up and make it more complicated, it becomes more complicated. That's just the way life is. So we keep everything under one domain name, and then we build a backup or a secondary domain controller. And the reason we build a secondary domain controller is it acts as a, not really a load balancer. It doesn't really load balance. I do have that in my show notes, but that's not really what I'm talking about here. What I'm looking at is the secondary server, the backup domain controller, if we start getting pounded, and when you have 700 computers on your network, and we have so many classes and so many rooms, what tends to happen, more so than not, is on test days. Let's say test days when they're going to be using the computers and they're going to be pounding them hard. We may have 200 simultaneous logons. Now, if you get 200 simultaneous logons to one Active Directory, there can be a slowdown. There's going to be a bottleneck because it has to authenticate each user coming in. What happens when you have that secondary domain controller is the secondary domain controller will start taking those logins also. And you'll actually see a balance. You'll see a load balancing happen, but it's not technically truly a load balancer, but you'll see the network balancing itself out. We've seen it 100,000 times, and it just simply works. And that is why I like to keep one domain name and have a backup domain controller or secondary domain controller with the same name. The only reason you'd want to have, and with we used to use two different domains. When I first started to school, we had a teacher's domain and we had a student's domain. Now, it started to make a lot of issues. Here was the issue was, a teacher wants access to all their students' work files on a particular server. But that server was on the student's domain. Now I have to migrate the teachers somehow to the students or give, and the way the old tech director did it was really insane. They gave the teacher logon accounts to the student's domain. So we log out of that account, log into your student's account, and then you have access to those folders. There's somebody that don't know what they're doing. That's somebody that wakes up in the morning, brushes their teeth, combs their hair, and goes to work and says, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do today because I don't have a clue how to fix it. Don't be that guy, right? Think about things. Get down to the easiest way, folks, and we're going to talk about documenting your network. I've been doing this for better part of 27 years, and I've been doing technology work. So let me tell you, and believe me, I don't know everything. I know I'm doing this podcast. You think, well, Jack's, getting it going. But as I said earlier, I learn from other people, and I learn all the time. I keep my ears open. I keep my eyes open. I listen to podcasts. I watch videos on the internet to keep learning. And my wife always says, you eat, sleep, and you go to the bathroom with this stuff. Because in the bathroom, stack some magazines, right? You're probably talking about your house. Stack of computer magazines. You're always flipping through there thinking, what's next? What can I do? What can I work on? And if that's you, then you're going to be fine. But today's modern day servers, with the great security we have with Active Directory and the great way of doing things, it just makes sense to keep everyone the same domain. And you can, you know, we secure folders, we secure user accounts, we secure network privileges to different things, all through the group policy manager, and it works really, really well. You know, and we can manage the students, you know, but I am one of them tech directors in a school where I'm not going to lock you down. I'm not going to give you a computer and then lock you in a jail cell not connected to anything, because it's worthless. You have to have internet connectivity. Yeah, you can't be blocked on everything in the world, and you have to be able to access your user stuff that you need on the network. As long as I'm doing those three things, then I'm doing my job daily. So believe me, you have to do that. Now, what I was saying earlier, no matter what you know or who you are, the simplest way to work this stuff out, we do it every year, and right about now, between April and May, we sit down, we start doing it. We get out a pencil, and we get out a legal pad. And we sit down and we start drawing this out with no technology around us. I don't even want to see technology when I'm drawing this out. And we'll draw out, we'll do a rough draft of users, who we have using our network. We'll do a rough draft of what network resources we do have. Then we do a rough draft of what network users have to use that network resources that we have. Who has to go where, when do they have to go there, and why do they have to go there. All this different stuff is all pulled together on actual legal pads. And we sit at a table and we'll draw this. It could take 2 or 3 days to hone this into what we want to do. Then and only then do you open up a program that we're going to be talking about here, like SmartDraw, Visio, or Dai, and you start mapping this stuff out. You start actually sitting down and drawing your network out and building it. Once you have it on paper, then you can build it. Folks, don't go out there and put a server together and give it a good old domain name like goodoldboys.com. And you have a great domain name there. And you're going to start hooking computers to it and putting users on it. And people are going to log into your network and they're going to do fantastic things. You're screwed up already because you're putting that cart before the horse. The horse should always pull the cart. You can't put the cart before the horse. The horse would be happy if it could ride in the cart, and maybe you'll pull it. Maybe that's what you're going to be leading yourself to. But like I said, anyway, sometimes keep it simple, stupid. Draw it out and sit down and make a plan. We need a plan before we can actively move out there and go, right? So you have to do this stuff, and you have to be ready to go with this stuff. It also helps with security, and we could talk about that in another night for sure. That could be a whole night conversation. All right. Little pause for a little swig of the old beer there. Remember, that's Magic Hat number 9. Okay. So now we're coming to the meat and potatoes of tonight's show. And it is very, very simple. I just started talking about it. It's something we all have to do, and it's something none of us want to do. I hate this job. This is the most terrible part of my job. Probably one of the worst things in my job I don't like to do. And it is documenting my network. I like building networks. I like building servers. I like putting switches in. I like sticking fiber up. I like putting wireless units on the ceilings. I like making my network talk. I like making things hum. And I like to give the user the best damn experience the user can have. But I don't want to draw it up. I don't want to document it. And I don't want to write down what I did. Because it's just a daunting task. It's just something that just I don't want to do. And it seems like every time I get it drawn up and it's beautiful and it looks really great, guess what happens? I add something to my damn network and I have to redraw something. I have to redraw some network server. I have to redraw something. I add a virtual server. You got to add something new. Anyway, I don't like doing that. But I have to do it. It's a must-do task. It's something that we need to do. Because when something breaks, folks, it's still easier to go back to the old pencil and paper. Flip through a book. We keep a binder of our networks. Flip through to Network Switch Closet 5. Look in there, and you can see where all of your connections go to the actual computers. Pretty handy. If not, you have to tone them out and figure it out then. And that's not the time to figure it out. All right. So the first thing you're going to do is find a program to create your network drawing. This is very critical. It's very, very critical to find some kind of program that you like to use. A lot of people out there using Windows really like Visio. I never got the hang of Visio. I find it to be very complicated. It's very bloated, I would say, and it just doesn't feel right to me. So I found a program some years ago, probably back on version 2 when I started writing this thing, called SmartDraw. Just do a search on Google for SmartDraw. You'll find it. It's not an expensive program. Just buy the standard edition. You don't need the pro edition. And what it allows you to do, it gives you a bunch of stuff in there. The stuff I like, and it has server racks. It has 1U, 2U, 3U servers. You can put them in that rack. You know, these are all drawings. So you're just drawing this stuff on a computer screen. But it gives you little things, little diagrams. It gives you switches, routers, database symbols, virtual machine symbols. All that stuff is in there. And that SmartDraw works really, really well. And then there's a free version that our local college decided they were going to teach called DIA, D-I-A, or DIA, DIA, whatever. It should be dead. I know, again, I'm going to receive a lot of emails for that because every time I make a comment, and I know it's stupid of me to say that, because there's some people out there going, Jack, I really love it. It works really great. Leave me alone. Well, that's wonderful. And if it works for you, then use it. Because it's free, just use it. Hell, I've seen guys use Word. I've seen guys use programs such as, you know, OpenOffice, LibreOffice, the draw program. It will work. As long as you can make boxes, you can build diagrams, and you can make this stuff happen. So when we go to network, or we go to draw our networks out or document our network, the first thing we do is we begin with our servers. All right, this is critical. Because if... when you build things, I always say you build things from the inside out. So when you're building your servers, you're building it from the inside out. So draw your server racks first. This is very important. When you're drawing your server racks, make sure, and I had one guy that didn't do this, and it kind of messed us up a little bit. Let's say you have a, let's say we have a web filter in a rack. A web filter, we have, if you have a spam filter in your rack, we have our wireless controller, our Cisco wireless controller in our rack. When you draw those on your network diagrams, write the IP addresses on the device. Because when you open that book up and you say, well, I need to log into that device, you're going to need the IP address to get into it. You're going to have to know what that is. So it's a great way to start really, really documenting your stuff and keeping it documented. When you're drawing virtual servers and when you're building your virtual servers, what you need to do then is you need to take that virtual server, the physical server, draw it, and then we make little virtual servers coming out of it. And again, with SmartDraw, you have those little virtual server symbols or little data symbols. Put on there which rack is on there or which server's on there, and also give the IP address for each one of those servers, and then the IP address to your virtual server. Now, we use VMware, and you know with VMware, each box has its own IP address. So you can manage that actual server itself. And then you can, it just makes it so much easier to do. And on that part, you would stick that in there and do those. Now, the switch racks, I like to call it the living, breathing beasts of our network. These switch racks change so rapidly and change so quickly because you're always plugging something in. You're always moving something. If you have a bad port, maybe you're shutting a port down. You're going to move it to another port. Keep this stuff documented because what happens is somebody will go. And we have a rule with our main switch rack. The main switch rack, if you're going to plug something in, you better be opening the book up and have a look at the actual drawing to make sure that a port, right? If you have a 24-port switch and there's not something in port 4, chances are port 4 might be bad, so you better be able to see. Now, we do tape them once they're bad because a port will go on a switch. You just tape it and move on. That's just life. But if it's not taped, you better be looking to see where it is and why it was getting that way, why it was have to be shut down. Now, the thing is, like I say, they're living, breathing beasts because they just seem to grow. And that's just from plugging things in. Next thing you do, if you have a main fiber backbone, right? If you have that fiber backbone, like we have a, I think it's a tier 2 switch, but it's a fiber switch. There's 8 fiber ports in it. That's all it's used for. And as our fiber ports are coming into 1, 2, 3, and 4, those are labeled in our documentation of where those go. Because if you have something happen, if you have a network crash, or if you have a collision somewhere and you have a major network packet collision happening, you can isolate that fiber very easily just by pulling each fiber line. And then if you get your collision cleared, you can actually clear that switch right then and shut that part of your network down without affecting the rest of the network. The next thing is to go out to each one of your wiring closets. Now, this is a very tall task, but you go out to each one of your network closets, and you have to get in there, and you're going to have to tone these out. If you don't know what a toner is, it's a simple device, because I get college kids that come in all the time, and we hold the toner up, and they're like, what's that? It's a very simple device. You plug one end into the network patch. So in a classroom or in one of your office spaces or your cubicles, you go back to your switch and you tone it. You have a little wand and you hold the button in. And when you hear the tone, that tells you that that cable goes to that certain patch. Also label that in your documentation. And this helps because when you have somebody calls you and says, look, my network or my computer just don't work on the network no more. It fell off the network. It's not on the domain. It's not connected to the internet. You know, then you can go right to that panel, open your book up, have a look, and say, well, they're plugged into port number 6. Port number 6 isn't lit. Now you either have a problem with a bad network card. It's not a bad cable. So many new guys, they come in and like, Jack, I think the cable's bad. We're going to run a new line. Unless you have mice or rats or something in your ceilings eating your cables, it's probably not the cable. Or if a tornado or earthquake happened, maybe it could have broke. But usually, if folks, once a cable is pulled into a network, nothing's going to happen to that in the walls. It just doesn't ordinarily happen. So again, look at their very simple solutions. The very simple solutions is just that. It could be a bad port. You can move it to another port, see what happens. If it lights up, you're golden. You fixed it. If not, move to the computer. And look at the computer. Make sure... you know, just make sure the patch cable's plugged in. Maybe the patch cable came out. Something, again, very simple. If not, if it all else fails, put another network card in the computer, plug it in, see what happens. It might be the case. But you see that if you have the port written down in your book, then you already know where to look and where to go. And this takes time. We are still, I've been at the same job for 10 years, and we're still documenting our network. Now, call me silly, kick me around, call me lazy, whatever. But when you have two guys running the network that we have, you know, with as many nodes out there as we have, as many servers we have running and other stuff that's going on, we use this stuff for a rainy day, if it's slow. And a lot of times when the interns come in, they do a lot of the mapping out for us, and then we do the drawings. They bring us back papers and say, here's so-and-so, and then we do the drawings and get those set up and ready to go in the book. So again, it's just a really good idea to document your network. It's really important to do so. And, you know, take your time with this. This is very, very important. You're writing a very important book. It's almost, to me, it's almost like I built this network. And if you remember listening to a song one time called I Built This City on Rock and Roll, well, I say I built this network on sweat and tears and blood, right? Sometimes. You know, you knock your knuckles, you rip your arms up running wire through your ceilings or whatever. This is kind of like writing that network Bible, if you would, to that golden network that you just built, right? You're documenting something that you built. And I think that's really, really the way to put it. And what happens is many times, let's say if you're in a job right now and you're a network, one of the networking guys, you just do some of the networking repair, whatever, and you just got a job as a network admin somewhere, an administrator somewhere in the network. So you're going to move on. And, you know, you have this whole thing drawn up on your network. The next guy is going to be so happy with you when he walks in and he finds his book laying on your old desk that you left there. And then you're going to be so heartbroken when you walk into the new job thinking, ah, I'm sure they documented their network, and you look and there's nothing. Such as when I took over where I was, there was nothing at all. I mean, there was a mess, but other than that, and luckily where I worked, they granted me the permissions because it was so horribly bad to rebuild from ground up. And I've rebuilt it in 10 years to the point now where it's very manageable and it's running much smoother than what it did before I got there. And somebody told me that once. If you take any job, the pride of a job, the absolute best pride of your job is I always want to leave it better than when I first started. Because then you know you accomplished something. I don't care if you're there a year, 5 years, or 50 years. If you leave the job and it's better than when you first started, then you accomplished your mission and your goal. So I think that's really, really important. All right. So that's about it. I'll get off my soapbox with documentation. And believe me, I still have a lot of documenting to do on my own network. And it's just the way it is. I mean, you know, it takes time to do this stuff. But find a piece of software you like to draw your network out with and start drawing it out. I think you'd be very happy once you get done. Folks, I have a lot of you that's already signed up for these online courses. And, I hate at the end of every podcast hearing a sales pitch, but this is my best way to talk to you because I get to talk to you about servers and networks. And then I get to tell you, hey, there's online classes you can take. And you could take online classes anywhere on the internet. There's millions of them. I've seen them. I've been out there. I've been looking. Because I teach you stuff online, I want to know who else is teaching you stuff online. What are they charging? What are they offering? I have found very, very high-priced courses on the internet for very low-quality education. Now, be that what it is, I'm not saying that mine is the best education in the world. I'm sure you can go to a college somewhere and maybe even learn more. But these courses are going to get you moving and get you moving fast. That's why I built them. You can learn Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi5 Server. That's for virtualization. We talked about that during the show today, ESXi. And these courses are very much self-paced. You watch a video, and you take a 3 or 4 question quiz. And let me tell you, folks, I've had a great response. We have a ton of students, a ton of you out there been listening to this podcast going, I want to learn more about, especially Windows Server 2012. It's so new. People are like, well, and it's coming, folks. I mean, it's here, so you might as well learn it. You know, you might as well get up to date on it and get moving with it. Not even if you're going to, maybe you're not going to upgrade right now, but you might as well have a look at it. And this is the easiest, most inexpensive way to have a look at it, folks. These courses are easy to follow. Very much self-paced. You can find them at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online classes link at the top of the page. Again, it's self-paced. You watch a video, take a quiz. Once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate in the mail. And a lot of people are already responding to me saying, Jack, I think, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty certain that the server course I took with you helped to land me this new job. And that's what I'm trying to do here is pay it forward. That's why these courses are inexpensive. A lot of these companies out there are making their living by teaching you these courses. I have a day job. I wouldn't feel right. I couldn't sleep at night by charging $2,000. I was told by one guy, why don't you charge $1,000 for your course? And I said, well, if you want to pay me $1,000, I'll take it. But other than that, I just don't feel right charging that kind of money. I want you guys to get the education and girls out there to learn this stuff and get an understanding for this stuff and make it inexpensive enough where anybody can sign for these courses. So there you go. The courses, like I said, will take you from install to administrating the servers and the virtualization software. So once again, you can sign up for those today, right now, at tipsfromtheserverroom.com and click on the online class link at the top. Or you can go to jackstechcorner.com and there's also the link there for the online courses. So, folks, have a great work week if that's at all possible. If you can, please answer my questions and about the VPN, about the LogMeIn. If you have anything, you can maybe throw in there and help me with something new that I can use instead of using LogMeIn. because we don't want to have to pay for anything. So I'm looking for more or less a free solution or a very, very inexpensive educational solution. So I would be happy if you turn that in and give me some ideas there. So folks, again, have a great work week. I will see you back here next week for another Tuesday evening show at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, go to Spreaker at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or go to my tipsfromtheserveroom.com and click on the radio show at the top, and you can listen to shows live and chat live. I can get you on here. Again, if you want to co-host with me one night, please email me, let me know, and say, look, Jack, I know about Max or I know about Linux, and let's strike up a conversation, right? There's no video, so nobody's going to see our faces. I always said, you know, I got a great face for radio. Did you ever hear that? Anyhow, all right, thanks, folks. I'll see you back here next week. Take care. Have a great week. Keep those servers humming. I'll talk to you then. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.